Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, September 20th, 2008. I'm Harley Schlanger and I'll be your host today. This was the week when the inevitable occurred, when it was no longer possible to hide the truth, which Lyndon LaRouche presented in his July 25th, 2007 webcast, when he said that the financial system has crashed. On that occasion, LaRouche said, "Only a fundamental and sudden change in the world monetary financial system will prevent a general, immediate chain reaction type of collapse. At what speed, we do not know, but it will go on, and it will be unstoppable. And the longer it goes on before coming to an end, the worse things will get." That's a quote from that webcast, July 25th, 2007. And in spite of this public forecast, and Mr. LaRouche's reiteration of it at numerous public conferences and venues around the world, as the disintegration of the financial system escalated this week in public view, we still see commentators, financiers, congressmen, officials from Wall Street, and others say, "No one saw this coming." Well, as I often say, once again, LaRouche was right. Today on the LaRouche Show, we have the privilege of hearing directly from Lyndon LaRouche, and I hope that those who said it can't happen will pay attention this time. And we'll be joined later by John Hofel and Leona Fanchang to discuss Mr. LaRouche's comments. So, Lynn, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, the first thing to understand this process is take the following considerations. Now, the cleanup is now in the hands of Hank Paulson, the Secretary of Treasury, along with Ben Bernanke, otherwise known as Helicopter Ben. These fellows, especially Secretary of Treasury, represent, by background, at least for the past 30-odd years, investment bankers. Now, what is collapsing, and what has collapsed in the past several weeks, is essentially almost the entirety of what is called the investment banking community. Now, this is very ominous because if you look back in history, go back to the 14th century, which is the last time that something like this happened in extended transatlantic experience, in modern transatlantic experience, or before modern. And that was the collapse of the Lombard banking system during the middle of the century. That is the 14th century. Let me get this thing off. So, oh my God. Get this guy off too. There's some phones trying to get in on me. Okay. So, the leading banker which did this was the House of Bardi. And the Bardi was one of the leading banks of the Lombard banking system of that century. The failure to deal with that crisis then by bankruptcy reorganization resulted in the collapse of Europe, all of Europe, into what was called a New Dark Age, in which half the parishes of Europe disappeared within a generation, along with one-third of the level of the total population. This was called the Dark Age. Now, what's collapsed in Washington today, most conspicuously, is investment bankers who have repeated essentially the same practice that the Lombard bankers of the 14th century practiced. And we're on the edge of a global financial economic collapse comparable to what happened in Europe in the so-called New Dark Age of the 14th century. It gets more nasty. What has happened? You have a president who is not known for his brains. That's the kindest thing I can say about the guy. But who has assigned Hank Paulson and other people in that community, the investment banking community, the equivalent of the Lombard bankers of the 14th century today, and put them in charge of rescuing their banking system, not ours. In the meantime, just to make things nice nasty, we recently, in recent years, repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. That act said we separate banking from fantasy, and fantasy is investment banking, especially these days. So now we have the banks are being taken over and gobbled up under this president and under Paulson, are being gobbled up by dying or dead investment banking institutions which are collapsing. So we are on the edge of a dark age if we don't change the policy. The president has put Paulson and Company, who represent, to save the remnant of the investment banking community. The worst possible thing you could do. You put the foxes in charge of the chicken coop.
Now, Lynn, the Fed and the Treasury have been pumping close to $500 billion over this last two-week period. We saw the government takeover of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, bankruptcy of Lehman, Bank of America swallowing Merrill Lynch, the so-called bridge loan to AIG. But you've said this bailout and no amount of money will solve this problem. Why is that?
Well, this is because there's no wealth there. There's no value there. This is purely financial speculation. This is gambling. It's a gambling house. Where's your production? Where's your production of wealth? Where do you have people employed in making things? What happened to the auto industry? What happened to all kinds of other industry? What's happening to agriculture? What kinds of employment are there? Is make work. This is exactly the way in which we came to the point of the collapse of the House of Barty. Exactly this method. What happened is the King of England had successively gone into debt to the House of Barty in order to finance wars, like the Iraq War the United States just dragged itself into for some time over this period. Then he refinanced and refinanced and refinanced. And one day, he could no longer pay his debt because they wanted all the whole land, the sheep, the whole kingdom of England as a foreclosure. In the meantime, the House of Barty had been doing the same thing all over France. And every part of the Lombard banking system of that period had been doing the same thing. Just like today, as in Europe today, as in the United States today, exactly the same procedure. So what we've done is we've put the thief, the fox, in charge of the chicken coop. And the issue here, is, let's look at the other side of the thing. You have two presidential candidates running loose. One, Obama, has absolutely no comprehension of anything to do with economics. None. Less than none. McCain is not pretty sharp on economics and doesn't claim to be. But McCain, at least, as we've seen the past week, took some decent counseling and adopted a statement of policy contrary to what Obama said, which is, unlike what Obama said, sane. Now, so that shows that our condition is such that we have now put the foxes in charge of the chicken coop. And the president, who's an idiot, is the chief backer of these things. If we do not stop this crazy president from continuing this lunatic policy, and if we do not get the foxes out of the chicken coop and go back into normal bankruptcy reorganization and bankruptcy procedure, if we do not approach Russia, China, India, and other countries to come to an emergency agreement on international currency and financial stabilization, this planet is going into a dark age.
Well, Lynn, Paulson and President Bush have both said, and of course with Bush saying something, we have to take in consideration what you said about the president, but they've said there's no option to this bailout other than a collapse. So how do we stop this? What recourse do the American people have?
Well, you just point out that when a time comes, when the accounting comes, and this president is out of office, and the country is totally bankrupt, and some people claim they own things, at that point, the American people are going to revolt along with other nations. And they're going to take these guys who did this to them and say, these were all a bunch of criminals. And everything they have is now forfeit because it was all thievery. As a matter of fact, most of what's been done in shutting down industries, looting industries and so forth in our country so far has been pure thievery. This is actually, in a moral sense, criminal, and most probably the courts, looking at this in retrospect, will agree that much of what has been the hullabaloo about the great financial system we have has been nothing other than pure criminal thievery.
Do you expect opposition from the Congress?
There'll be opposition, not so much from the Congress. The Congress is going away. It's leaving town as a going-away present to the American people in order to also, but to escape from its responsibilities for this situation. What has to be done is a number of measures, which I've prescribed. But otherwise, we have to take action based on the principle of a law we used to have, Glass-Steagall. What we have to do now is immediately is go in and take all the banks that are real banks, chartered banks, state banks, and federal banks, on which the communities are dependent, and introduce what I proposed last year as the Homeowners and Banks Protection Act. We have to protect, we cannot have mass foreclosures against our citizens. We cannot have banks that are essential to the community being closed down. So we have to separate the part of banking, which is true banking, from this funny money banking, which has been gobbling up the real banks. So we go into all these layers of banks that are in trouble. We simply have to say, go a procedure on this, we have an emergency. All the parts of those banks, which represent a takeover by interest representing by these Lombard banking type, investment banking type swindles, that part gets frozen. The other part of the bank, which is real deposits, real things, gets protected. We then have to get a new act to go through to sort these out. We'll take the banks as such, the real banks, the chartered banks, save them, put them under federal bankruptcy protection and continued operation. Take the phony part, the residue of the investment banking system, which as a whole is virtually wiped out. It is wiped out, it's worthless. But freeze it and sort this out in bankruptcy proceedings, not by some arbitrary, simple proceeding. But put it to one side in a special category until we can get around to cleaning the mess up. We must, right now, we must stop the foreclosures. We must save the households. We must save the communities. We must keep legitimate banks, even if they're bankrupt, with their doors open and functioning. We have to protect the real assets of the citizens, the deposits, and so forth. We do not have to protect a nickel's worth of the investment banking claims.
Now, yesterday there was a statement from Russian President Medvedev who said that the Russians are prepared to help in this crisis, and you immediately issued a call for President Bush to contact him to begin that discussion. What should happen between the United States and Russia right now?
Well, if the president had any brains, and I'm not sure he does have any, but if he may have some people who can pressure him into doing it, to get him to say, we're going to negotiate with Russia directly, now, immediately, as an emergency discussion, in order to get four nations, the United States, Russia, China, and India, which are the largest nations on this planet in terms of power and so forth, to take the leadership in a provisional action, bringing other nations then in, to set up a freeze on the relative values of currencies and so forth, and to take actions which amount to international bankruptcy reorganization protection for the entire international system. That can be done. If the United States, Russia, China, and India agree, I can assure you Japan will agree, Korea will agree, and so forth, and many other nations. And Europe will have to agree. Maybe the British won't, but Europe will have to agree. So under that condition, we can negotiate our way through this mess. But if we just sit there and let Hank Paulson continue to do his funny little number, and wait for the smoke to clear, we're not going to have a United States. So, and it, we may not have an election. One has to realize that the tempo of this development is such. There's no guarantee we're getting into November as an intact nation. You can have a total financial breakdown of this system in which we are unable to conduct a presidential election. That's the kind of reality we're facing now.
And where, besides what you're doing and what the LaRouche Youth Movement is doing, where do you expect or where do you think a leadership can emerge that will take on this fight in the United States?
Well, you have bankers who are serious bankers. As I said, you have obviously from the Republican side, you have that the policy that the McCain put forth as his policy. I don't think he drafted it, but I think he did adopt it. That policy is sensible. That's a beginning. That's a reference point. We can start around that. We can get some members of Congress and others to begin to form a coalition. Maybe we'll get some Democrats out of insanity and agree to cooperate with that. Then we'll have an emergency recall of the Congress and get into action and do things in the direction which I've indicated and keep people in the Congress understand what this is. They're just cowardly. The Felix Rohatyn and George Soros, a couple of thieves, have too much power over the Democratic Party. And also the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party in particular. If we get the Democratic Party out from under the control of these thieves, then perhaps the Democratic Party, at least many of them, will come back to their senses. And we have also some Republicans who are being sensible. Perhaps together we can then begin to sort something out.
And on that, I assume that means that Nancy Pelosi has to be removed from a position of leadership. But what do you think? What role do you think Senator Hillary Clinton can play in this?
Well, Hillary is not trying to be a presidential candidate right now. She's trying to be a senator and waiting until see what the smoke clears. Her husband, Bill, who is a completely different entity, though they're quite sympathetic to each other, is actually acting as an international figure as a former president. His role will be more significant in one sense. Hers will be a very significant role as one of the most important figures in the Senate. But Bill's role will be a key factor in international negotiations. He's highly respected internationally. He can be a key factor in securing the United States the advantage of people who will trust him internationally. Well, they will not trust the present president of the United States or his predecessor.
Well, Lynn, I know you're very busy and have to leave. I want to ask you one last question, or actually, what would you say to the American people then right now that they have to do if they wish to save their future and their children and their grandchildren's future?
And the problem they have is they have no real leadership, from national leadership. You have to create that national leadership. I'm part of that, and there are other people who will willingly band with me in creating a kind of caucus of influence to help steer this process. There are a lot of people out there who have competence. They are not people who necessarily will step forward and act like a president or so forth, but they're competent. We can create among people like that, we can create a consensus and with much advantage in terms of being recognized internationally. Under those conditions, we can fight our way out of this mess.
Okay, and Lynn, I know you have a webcast coming up on October 1st, but we'll be watching the website, the LaRouche PAC website, where people can go and get your statements from the last few days, and I'm sure we'll hear more from you over the next couple of days.
Yep.
Okay, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, you've been listening to Lyndon LaRouche presenting his unique analysis, and I might say uniquely accurate analysis of both the nature of the crisis and the solution to this crisis. Now we'll bring in John Hofel, the EIR banking correspondent and a leading expert on this financial collapse, and also from Los Angeles, Leona Fancheng, who has been working with Mr. LaRouche and is now back out in the field to bring these ideas to the population and to the leadership to the West Coast LaRouche Youth Movement. So, John and Leona, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Now, John, we heard what Mr. LaRouche just said, and one of the things that I'd like to just start with is this question of the policy. And by the way, before I say this, we'll take your questions. We have one question in already. We'll take it up in a moment. But anyone with a question can email us at radio@larouchepub.com. So send us your email questions at radio@larouchepub.com. We're talking with John Hofel, and this is LaRouche Show on Saturday, September 20th, 2008. We've got another weekend at Bernanke's. What do you think these guys are going to cook up this weekend? Do they really think they can solve this?
Well, it's all they've got from their perspective, because they have been running this bailout now. Really, you know, it's been accelerating since last December when they first started these emergency lending facilities. You know, it actually started before then when they started.
When was the Bear Stearns bailout?
Oh, that was in March. See, these things tend to erupt around the end of the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the quarter is when you actually have to put out your book, your financial statement.
So this thing has just been escalating since really last July, as Lynn identified, July 2007.
Yes. When the Bear Stearns hedge funds died, that was the signal to everybody in the securities market that the game was over. Because what happened was that some of the investment banks seized the collateral that Bear Stearns owed them, that had the pledge with them for some loans, and tried to sell it and could only get, bids as low as 20 cents on the dollar. And they had to stop selling it because the effect of selling it at that price would be to set a market price for something that was so low that if people marked it to market, they'd all be gone.
Well, John, is that when the so-called credit freeze started, when they found they couldn't trade each other the paper that they had been trading for some time?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody knew. Suddenly everybody realized, okay, the game is up. We're holding all of this. We're holding huge piles of junk here, toxic waste. We have to get rid of it. Where can we find somebody to sell it to? So you had banks like Lehman Brothers who sold it to some of it to the Florida State Pension Fund, you know, that sort of thing. They were unloading it as fast as they can on the suckers and on their clients. But the banks all knew what shape they were in. They knew what shape the others were in. And nobody would trade with anybody. Everybody was trying to unload.
Now, John, let me give you the first email question we have, because I want to get more people to send in their questions. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who want to know what's going on. Here's your chance to find out. This is from someone from London. A man named John Morton writes in under the subhead Willful Destruction and Treason. And he says, past weeks clearly demonstrate that Lyndon LaRouche's forecasts have been absolutely correct. I and a great many other people believe that this collapse, that there's a level of collusion that goes beyond mere incompetence with the congressional leadership and the presidency. And he says, while people are watching to see what's going to happen, we're on a very short fuse. It seems almost certain that those pushing for the fascism in the United States are going to win. Now, clearly, he's pessimistic about the American people, whereas we heard from Lynn that he thinks there could be a counterpoll. But the question I really want to get at on this is that, as you say, they've been at this for a while. Does Paulson actually think that this can work, or is this just more of time buying?
Well,
and if so, what are they buying time for?
I think that what this is complete desperation. That nothing they have tried has worked. That the problem they face is that they keep trying to deal with what has happened before, and the problem is that the bottom is falling out of everything, that the system is vaporizing faster than they can bail it out. It's like trying to fill up a hole that's growing at the bottom. And so nothing works, and the longer they go through this process, the further behind they get. So now what have they're doing what we said they were going to do all along, that the only way out, once you start down this bailout road, the only way out for you within the realm of your view of these things from the standpoint of the investment banks and others is to have the government buy all the bad paper. And so now that's what they're doing. They tried to pretend they weren't. They kept coming up with all of these schemes that could make it seem like they could deal with it without having to do it. And now they've come out openly, and Paulson has said, the government has got to guarantee everything. The government has got to buy all this paper. And, you know, this is the only thing we can do, because if we don't do this, as Dodd said, Senator Dodd said on Good Morning America the other day, that we're just days away from a complete financial meltdown.
Now, John, in terms of buying up the bad debt, you and I saw this back in the 80s when we were sharpening our teeth on economic crises, looking at what was called the Texas Savings and Loan Crisis. But it was really somewhat of a dry run. They set up the Resolution Trust Corporation, which did exactly, I think, what Paulson is talking about now, which is to buy up all the bad debts of the savings and loans after they put them under. I think there were close to 750 savings and loans that were put under by 1989, and then the good assets were given to the commercial banks. Now, is that a kind of model today, the Resolution Trust Corporation, only on a scale one or two orders of magnitude larger?
Yeah, I mean, it's as you would expect, you know, something that's happening, you know, decades later, it's much stupider. Because at least with the RTC, they were taking in hard assets occasionally. When they would shut down these SNLs, they would take in a lot of hard assets.
John, if I just on that point, a lot of the mortgages back in the 80s were still being paid, but it was the more exotic investments that the SNLs went into under the deregulation that cost them the debt. Is that basically, when you say hard assets, you're talking about mortgages that had a real income stream back then?
Yeah, things with real income streams, office buildings, you know, and basically they seized, you know, that repossessed office buildings and things like that, you know, homes. They had a lot of, there were real assets in it, maybe overvalued assets, but they were real.
But in this bubble, we're talking about paper with nominal value, which is related to nothing.
Yeah, we're talking about mortgage, things like mortgage-backed securities and collateralized debt obligations and collateralized loan obligations, all of these alphabet soup derivatives games, which are all pure gambling. Because you're not even taking, you know, when you buy a mortgage-backed security, you're not even taking in, it's not even a mortgage. It's just a bet. It's just a bond. So you're buying, in a sense, what the government is being asked to basically bail out the casinos by buying all the casino chips.
But you are betting that somewhere down the line, someone's going to pay the mortgage and there'll be an income stream.
Yeah. Yeah, except that the problem is that real estate values continue to fall, foreclosures continue to grow. You know, the losses are still growing, so you can't even quantify the size of the bailout you're committing yourself to when you do this.
So when they say a couple hundred billion, Paulson is really probably deliberately underestimating the actual cost of this bailout. We may be talking about 3, 4, 5 trillion on top of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac 5 trillion.
Oh, I think so. And you're talking at least in the realm of trillions. And because the other question is, when you bail all this debt out, when you deal with this debt crisis by taking on more debt, then you're left with more debt to bail out.
And interest on it also. Well, and now it's being added to the federal deficit, which means the federal government, which means the people of the United States are now going to have to pay this debt plus interest on this debt.
Yes, yes, and we don't even know what the size of the debt is.
So to the listeners, that means you. Now, John, I want to come back to this in a moment, but I want to bring Leona in here because Leona has been working on a project which gets at one of the central points that Lyndon LaRouche made in our discussion earlier, where he talked about the fact that we have no physical production going on. Where are auto plants? Where are American agricultural producers? And it's the separation that occurred beginning in the 70s between the financial side of the economy and the physical side of the economy, so that now we're dealing with the speculative bubble. Leona, you're working with a group that's producing a video for the LaRouche PAC website on what happened to the auto sector. Why don't you give us a report on what you're going to be covering and what the progress is on this?
Okay, well, basically, we had put out this fight beginning, late 2004, early 2005. Lyndon said, if we don't save the auto sector, or what seemed like the auto sector, we would be in a condition where we could not build, were we to make the decision. We could not rebuild the country from the mess that it is now. Now, it's funny because when LaRouche says the auto sector, he doesn't really mean the auto sector, which the Democrats didn't get, as you see from their proposal to build green cars.
Yeah, they still don't get it. Three, 4 years
later. Cars. Right.
Yeah.
And what LaRouche had been saying is, look, we had a very vibrant machine tool sector. That's the capability to build new, improved machines that constitute any industry. We had it, it was basic as our basis for retooling. In fact, it was ironically the auto sector to build our entire war machine, our arsenal of democracy to win the war and to win World War II. And it was exactly that capability that we were going to retool to start going into a nuclear age. But because through various very explicit subversion, we decided to go against that policy. As soon as Roosevelt died, we went against that policy and instead took the only thing that we destroyed everything. I destroyed the whole idea that we were going to go nuclear or ship machine tools out to third world countries so they wouldn't be third world countries anymore. And we decided to say, okay, well, let's lodge these machine tools that constitute the advancement of a society, and let's just lodge them in building nicer and more entertaining cars. So that was really the 50s. It was right after it was actually right after the Atoms for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're going to take this important sector of productivity, right, the only thing that could possibly build us new power plants or anything, or give us machines that could build power plants, we're just going to imprison them in this building more autos.
So, Leona,
cars.
You're saying you think it's more important to build power plants than souped-up Mustangs?
I think it's I think people already have their own. They can wear clothes for their personality. They don't have to have a new car for each time for to have their personality.
Clothes made in Guatemala.
Right. And so what LaRouche had said is, look, right now, because we only have the machine tool capability in the auto sector, because the only thing that's left is in the auto sector, if right now we let the entire auto sector be completely dismantled, be completely looted, then even if you were to make the decision to start rebuilding, you wouldn't actually have the capability to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that you could just call back up again. Your engineers disperse. They do other things. You're not training a next generation of engineers that could possibly take this up. Your machines rot. You don't have a steel industry to build those machines anymore.
So, Leona, what you're saying essentially is that by not taking up LaRouche's initiative around the Emergency Reconstruction Act and mm-hmm. retooling and transforming the auto sector, this is part of what he's talking about as a dark age. We're losing the capability, to the physical capability, to produce what we need to survive.
Exactly. And so that wasn't, now think about this, that was in 2004, 2005. And you've seen now that a lot of things have happened since then, including thousands of acres of floor space, people, the population, parts of the UAW. I mean, you saw this actually at the, ironically, at the Democratic convention, you had this UAW worker who came up and said, look, my entire union is about to be unemployed as of this week or in a couple weeks from now.
What is it, about 250,000 jobs lost in autos since Lynn first initiated his call for moving in to transform the auto sector?
Right, exactly. And so you see it's continuing, and the collapse is continuing, as LaRouche said, and it's become very, there's only a certain amount of time where you can say, it's going to be gone. It's going to be gone. You won't be able to save it anymore. And so right now, we're mobilizing in a very extreme way. We're going to put out this video, and right now it's probably 2 weeks in the making or so. And it will go through mainly what exactly is the machine tool sector, which most people in our population have no idea what that means.
But all right, well, this should be very important, and you know, it does give an indication of where we have to go in a change of policy. Leona, if you stand by for just a minute, we're getting a lot of questions in from the audience, and it's interesting, we're getting some from internationally. We have Daniel from Berlin, I think from the LaRouche Youth Movement in Berlin, who writes a question. He says, in recent days, Clinton, Schumer, and John McCain have all made statements that are counterposed to the hyperinflationary bailout and in opposition to the Wall Street interests represented by Paulson and Pelosi. Senator Clinton mentioned the Home Loan Corporation and McCain, a new mortgage institution to protect people from foreclosure. The question Johnny asks is, do any of these proposals have the potential to move toward LaRouche's Homeowner and Bank Protection Act? I mean, my short answer would be, we have the HPPA, which is the best case, but do you see how these other, the momentum in this direction could bring people back to the HPPA, which does have support all over the country?
Yeah, I think the good news is there's a fight. There's finally a fight over these issues in Congress. And whenever you have a fight, then, you know, you can change, things can shift. And so we have the opportunity to move into this fight as people who think they have these plans, and they start talking about them, and we talk to them about them, and they begin to figure out that their plan, what they're talking about, really isn't sufficient. So then they start moving towards us, because the deeper we get into this thing, the more obvious it's going to be that the only people around who have any solutions are us. So the first thing is you pick a fight. You get a fight going. And then that gives you the environment in which you can shape some change. So, yeah, I think it's a very good thing. They're not there yet, but it's a start.
Now, John, in Leona's discussion about the auto sector, she mentioned that there is a bailout plan being put forward by Pelosi and others, essentially retooling autos to make them look like pregnant roller skates. What are they talking about? What's the proposal they've made, and why is that a ridiculous proposal?
You mean the Save the Auto Bonds Fund?
Yes.
They're saving paper. That's what I think. I think that the whole purpose of this is that the car companies will pay. You can't say you're going to bail out the debt of the auto sector. You think about the volumes of asset-backed securities that are issued by the GMAC and Ford Motor Credit and Chrysler Credit, these things who fund the purchase of automobiles, and they've been funding the purchase of automobiles to people who can't afford them.
So it's a difference between just what Lynn was saying, pouring more money into debt, as opposed to actually figuring out how to gear up production.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they don't look at production.
Mm-hmm.
They look. All of these people view the economy through the lens of finance and through money. And
we have a question from Mark Manta from New York City, who wrote in saying, isn't this simply a way of destroying the middle class and consolidating the banks so that there'll only be a couple of people controlling the banking system? I mean, is that part of what we're seeing here, John, that kind of global consolidation?
Yes, there is. I mean, it's obvious if you look at why are the investment banks disappearing? Because there's no more business. There's no more securities business. These were trading houses. The trading has died. They have no function anymore. They're collapsing. They're collapsing because they serve no function. So you're having a rationalization. This is why a week ago nobody would say this, and now the view is that investment banking is freestanding. Investment banks are over. They have to be folded into the commercial banks. And the reason why is they need the deposits of the commercial banks for funding. So that's a very interesting statement.
This is the consolidation we saw going back to a report we put out, I think, in 1981 on Citibank, where essentially they're going to go where the money is, wherever the assets are, and we're going to end up with an extremely small group of banks controlling all credit, and no government will have any access or ability of changing economic policy. Is that essentially what we're looking at?
Yes, absolutely. That's the consolidation. The consolidation is occurring, which is taking the control of banking and finance to the extent that there is any, the control out of government hands and putting it in the hands of this global slime mold. So it's globalizing it, so that there are no more what some people call national champions. That there's no national banking apparatus of any kind. There are basically no nations.
And that's why LaRouche says it's tantamount to treason, because it's
absolutely
ripping up the Constitution. I would say to our listeners, we have about a little less than 20 minutes. We're going to continue this discussion with John and Leona. I'm going to give you a phone number to call to get the pamphlet, Tantamount to Treason, and also to make contributions, because to win this fight, we have to put this kind of organizing material into the hands of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. So as this crisis deepens and people are hurt more and more and more to the point that it's excruciating and they have to do something, there is a way out. And the Tantamount to Treason pamphlet contains within it both a fact sheet of what happened and why, also who did it, and then LaRouche's three-part solution. So you can call to get that pamphlet, 800-929-7566. That's 800-929-7566. Also, you can pick up some of the material on the LaRouche Pack website, including the videos, and the video that Leona said will be out shortly. Now, Leona, the work that you're doing, one of the problems that Lind and LaRouche pointed out is that because of the baby boomer generation, which was more interested in souped-up Mustangs and what they looked like behind the wheel of a car than whether there was production, your generation has come up with almost no clue about physical economy. How, when you approach something like this auto video, do you take up this question to give people a sense of the relationship, for example, between creativity and physical production?
Well, for the young generation, it's difficult. You actually just have to build it from the bottom up. You just have to build go through the entire process of what it actually takes to build a society from the bottom up, or from the top down. And because the whole capability to understand what's required in a society, it's just not there in two whole generations. It's completely alienated. And so, there's just basic things that we found that in writing the video that you just have to go through that you probably wouldn't have to go through if you were talking to the audience of the generation of LaRouche.
So this is what he means by a dark age, then. You actually lose the capabilities that you need to guarantee increased prosperity.
Yes. Yeah, you actually become basically younger as a species. It's like starting over.
Well, now, in the work that you've been doing with the special teams working out of the infamous LaRouche basement, some of what you've done has been hands-on work, both in terms of geometric constructions, but also looking at the difference between digital and analog systems. Is this what we have to do with the education system to get people back to understanding what a physical economy is?
Yes, that's the only way. The only way that we can really start to understand, because the concept of a physical economy starts from what is the human species. And the only way we can understand that is to start from how is it that the human species has developed? Really, the what is the human species is basically the result of a very concise, focused line of discoveries that have been taken up, that have been substantiated until we have a society which is very advanced now, but is as you see, collapsing.
So the work you've done on Kepler and then Leibniz, Gauss, Riemann, we've had mostly in the 20th century science a retreat from that kind of physical science into mostly mathematical. Is that an accurate statement?
It's very much the same as what John just went through. It's the difference between a real house and paper. So you can buy as much paper as you want, but you can't live in it, and you can't eat it.
Can't eat it, that's right.
And you can't improve it either.
So when people can't eat, and they can't heat their homes in the winter, they can't afford gasoline to drive their souped-up cars, is that the point at which they're going to sit there and say, how the hell did we get to this point, what do we do?
I think they're already saying that. And that's really our role right now. We're seeing a very intense call for the youth movement and the LaRouche movement to move out very quick because we're sort of in demand.
Well, John, I know you've been following the various inane statements that have come out in the officials such as Paulson and Bernanke and others. But we do know also that there is, as Lynn said, there are some serious bankers out there. We've seen somewhat of a fight emerging in the Federal Reserve over interest rate policy. McCain made an interesting point yesterday where he said that the Federal Reserve should get back to its mandate of protecting the dollar and not doing bailouts. Do you have any idea to what extent this kind of potential exists out there as opposed to the out front insanity of Paulson and Bernanke?
I think there's a lot more out there than we realize, that we'll see it come to the fore. That the problem is that this outlook that we're talking about has been ruthlessly suppressed. That the people who adopt this outlook are basically shunted off to the side, whereas the people who are willing to go along with this casino nonsense and financial speculation have moved into the positions of power. But that there's still an awful lot of people left who know that this is insane and who've been sort of waiting for it to blow up and figure that, you know, when sanity returns, then maybe we can do something. So I think we need to lure these people out. It's like, you know, it's okay, it's now safe to come out. Let's come out and start rebuilding. Those of you who still are sane. And I think we'll see that there's probably a lot of people out there and that you can build a lot of support for such a thing. As the, you know, people are afraid of the power. We don't want to buck the system, but the system is disintegrating. And I think that will open up a lot of things.
I had a first-hand experience with that flying back into Houston 2 days ago following the hurricane. And what we're seeing is here you have the fourth largest city, supposedly a modern city in all respects, largely built after World War II, and a week after the hurricane came through, we still have over 50% of the households in the city of Houston have no electricity. We're seeing, as John, this is your old hometown, so you certainly know the high level of civilization in the city of Houston. Well, you're seeing people with guns fighting over gasoline, food. There's a curfew. The city is really shut down. And the idea that you could not have a power grid that could withstand winds, this was not a Category 4 hurricane. The strongest winds were 110 miles an hour. Much of the city had winds only in the 80 to 90 range. I don't want to minimize the force of nature, but look at what happened. You had Galveston Island practically wiped out. So this gets at what you're saying about the question of the need for rebuilding physical the physical economy of the country as opposed to the paper economy.
What happens when the grocery stores can't get the credit to buy the groceries? The trucking companies can't get the credit to deliver the groceries. What happens when there's no food in the grocery store, when there's no gas at the gas station?
That's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing in Houston. Yeah.
And this is where we're headed with this financial nonsense if we don't stop it.
So it's absolutely urgent. And we'll get, in just a couple of minutes, we'll get to the question of what you can do. But I have another question for either of you from Scott, who wrote in an email. He said, nearly every machine tool machinist is at or near retirement age, and there are no schools in the U.S. at the present time to teach a new generation how to do this kind of work. I might add that I know from the International Association of Machinists Union that they have a hard time finding people to go into the apprentice programs, and they're actually changing the visa requirements to bring people in from other countries to work in U.S. machine tool business. So how does someone new get an opportunity to learn these skills? Is there some... I mean, obviously, I think this is a legislative question, isn't it, Leona?
Yes, actually, the way that I think about it is that I think about the way that Roosevelt had done it. And, you know, same thing, we had largely, for the young people at least, an untrained population. But we had two things. You know, he had the Civilian Conservation Corps. You have basically a government instituted entity that is focused on training your next generation of workers. Now, training comes in. It does mean that we're going to bring some people out of retirement. This is sort of what, not to work, but to train.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what old people in the generation are supposed to do.
So some of these retired machinists should be employed teaching the new generation. Now, that, as Lynn said, that came in the 30s, and he's talked about this a lot, that you had a beaten-down population. But part of things like the TVA, for example, they built schools, they had adult education programs. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Right, exactly. And it does have to be something like that. It's a unified, top-down, instituted concept. Right, where it's an entire program to say we're going to create a population that can produce, that is qualified to be a first world country population.
All right, so we've been talking today about the great financial meltdown that was forecast by Lyndon LaRouche, which has hit with a vengeance. And John, I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell us what you expect probably Monday morning, when Hank Paulson holds a press conference to say, here's our latest rescue plan. Is it going to last more than 24 to 48 hours?
Well, you know, they built up a nice boost for it by pumping money into the stock market and blaming it and saying that this is, you know, support for our plan. I mean, you know, don't discount Sunday, because, you know, now we're in the process of things where, you know, things blow up every Sunday. So more institutions are going to fail. You know, it's very likely that the whole system will disintegrate before they actually get their plan implemented.
And do you think, I know one of the things we're going to do is we're going to have, there is this question, let me just bring this up here, from Mark in New York City. He says, who can we contact locally or on a state level to help get involved to have new protection policies, something other than standing in the street handing out literature that no one will look at. Well, obviously, this fellow is a little pessimistic about this. But obviously, we have to go to the Congress and overwhelm them with the demand that LaRouche's policies be implemented.
Yes, we have to scare the hell out of them.
They have to become more scared of their constituents than they are of the Wall Street and Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac contributors.
Yes, and more scared of what they see coming in the economy, what they see happening to the nation and what they see happening to their people. So, you know, this thing is not over yet. It's going to get worse, and it's going to get far worse very quickly, and nothing that they're doing is going to stop it. And so that defines the environment in which we're operating and organizing.
And Leona, I know after an extended period of time where you've been working on these fundamental scientific questions, working with the video production, you're now back out in a region where you're going to be going out and challenging students and others every single day to take up this challenge. What are you expecting? I assume you're glad to be back out in the field.
I am, actually. What I'm expecting is a completely transformed situation. I mean, one of very, very freaked out people, and I've already seen some of that. But two, just more people who are willing to take up the responsibility to say, what in the world is going on here? You know, my general life is not, my day-to-day activities is not corresponding with what's happening, or I can't carry out my day-to-day activities anymore because I can't drive to school anymore or work.
Right.
And so I think we're going to see a very transformed situation such that people are going to want to know and be very receptive to what LaRouche has been saying this whole time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things we can do is get people to listen to the first part of this program today, where Lynn very calmly, but with a real sense of urgency, laid out both the nature of the crisis. The fact is that this is a dark age. It's not a depression. It's not a recession. I mean, John, you may want to comment on Greenspan last Sunday saying it's a once-in-a-century situation, but it's probably not even going to be a recession. But Lynn very calmly identified the way out of this, and I think that's something that people need to listen to. That's the way Franklin Roosevelt communicated with the fireside chats. John, did you have any thoughts on Chairman Allen's inanity last weekend?
Well, ever since he left office, he's been on his global, what you might call his "It's Not My Fault" tour. But it is his fault. He's not solely to blame, but you know, he led us into this. And yes, it's a dark age. The idea of, and this phrase once-in-a-century event doesn't mean anything anymore because we're now having once-in-a-century events every Sunday.
The weekend at Bernanke's is becoming a regular weekend pastime, huh?
It's one endless emergency meeting at the New York Fed.
One dead, brain-dead bank after another. Well, and we also should mention, just in conclusion, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is now down to their last 40 or 50 billion. And if Washington Mutual goes under, will that pretty much wipe out their reserve?
Yes. They can't. They don't have the resources or the money, the personnel or the money to shut down all the banks in the United States that are bankrupt now.
Well, folks, I think the message from today is that we are in a complete meltdown. LaRouche forecast this over many, many years, and with increasing clarity in terms of the day-to-day unfolding of this back last July 2007, you have access to the material that you need to lead a fight. Contact all your congressmen, go to your state legislators, go to city councils. Let's create a tsunami of reaction against the bailout. We want to poison the well for this bailout and force Congress to act constitutionally when they come in the session next week. So This has been the LaRouche Show. John and Leona, I'd like to thank you both for joining. Again, our listeners can call 800-929-7566 to get copies of The Tantamount to Treason. And we'll be with you next Saturday with another edition of the LaRouche Show.